Hello, welcome to the Obojima podcast. This is these are the writers. We're the writers. My name is Jeremiah. This is Ari and Adam, and every week we jump in to discuss what we've written and discuss the world and join a writers meeting. Essentially, we build the world, and we're about to do that in front of you, our lovely audience, for the who knows how many times we've done this at this point, but. This time around, we are doing something very special. This is the first time we've ever talked about a subclass.
Oh.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, the first time we've ever done a podcast and subclass.
This is our first time.
This is my first rodeo.
This is actually the first one we ever recorded, and now we're just releasing
now
it.
Now we're releasing it, exactly. Today's podcast episode is about a subclass. It's about the Oni or Ogre Sorcerer.
What is that?
Who knows? And that's what we're going to talk about. So the first thing I want to discuss is Onis in the world. So first, we're going to do some set building. We're going to we're going to expand what an Oni is in the on the island of Obojima, or ogres, ogre mages, whatever this thing exactly is. And so I have an idea, I have a concept, but we haven't finalized it. So I want to bring it up, discuss it, and then figure out where it ends. And whatever we say here may not be the right thing or the final thing, but this is kind of what I want to do. So, Onis in the world. My idea, my concept is that thousands of years ago or a thousand years ago or whatever it was, a spirit turned demon became the first Oni. So this is like a creation myth for the Onis. And then from that, that Oni like had children. And those children went on to become like the monster that it's known as the Oni. And what I would like to do is make them feel, and we discussed this earlier, but have this kind of same feeling. I'm going to click this and do it this time.
Oh, yeah.
We have a little timer that I always forget to click. Is have the Oni feel the same way that Goliath felt in the Bible. So the concept is that there's not like hundreds of giants. It's there are five giants. There is Goliath, his four brothers, and his dad. And that makes the world feel, that tells a lot about the world. It makes it very unique and interesting. And it feels like when you are encountering one of these things, it's more important. So it's not that like, oh, it's an Oni. It's like, no, there's that's a named creature. Like that's like, there's, you know, I can only make up dragon names off the top of my head. Yeah. Those are really easy because it's just a jumble of letters and you end with Thrax and you're good.
Or it's like the Maiar in Lord of the Rings.
Exactly.
It's like there's Gandalf and there's,
they're all named. Like, yes. Like
there's a few of them.
There's
Radagast.
There's the overall title, like they're, you know, the Maiar, or there's the Pit Fiend. Or whatever they're called. What are they called?
Balrogs.
Balrog, thank you. There's the Balrog, but like they do have titles and they're referred by their names. So it's the same thing with Oni. Like they are Oni, they are demons, but they have titles and names. And in history, they're probably referred to as their titles rather than their, like, oh, it was an Oni that terrorized the land. You'd be like, no, this is like Kuma. And he, you know, he sundered this village and sunk it into the shallows. You know, 400 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, okay, cool. And that's how I want the Oni to feel in this space, rather than like this thing, you know, like
there's
a band of collection. There's tons of
trolls.
Onis and they're all over the place. You know, they should feel important and they should feel dangerous. I feel like Oni or ogre mages or whatever we end up calling them in Obojima should feel really, really scary. Like, of demons, this might be some of the most powerful demons on the island.
So what's keeping them from just destroying the island or taking it all over or, you know, wreaking havoc or being, you know, despots, you know? Because if they, I mean, the island's only yay big. And if
The
size of that map. It's like 30 feet from there. No.
Yeah.
It's only so big and that there's only maybe like we know potentially of two, that we haven't discussed yet, but let's say there's five on the island.
Sure.
What's keeping them from, you know, dividing the island up amongst themselves and just subjugating the entire population? Or, you know, so what is it? Is it just, is it that something's keeping them at bay? Are the witch covens sort of the counterbalance to the Oni? Like, if the Oni step out of line, the witch covens unite, destroy them. Is it the island itself nerfs their, or is it like something within the spirit realm? Like, if the Oni do something, something massive in the spirit realm awakens and, you know, is like prophesized or said to, like, it will awaken and wipe out the Oni.
I mean, I think it could be a handful of collection of those. I do like the idea that if Oni are these kind of the epitome of what a dangerous demon looks like on Obajima, then spirits, especially elder spirits, almost seek their destruction. And so, like, if an Oni were to reveal itself and to be flamboyantly out and mm-hmm. and expressing its wants and desires and dangers and being this, you know, maleficent thing, then, you know, some forest or river, like, the Oni takes over a town. Well, the river spirits whelmed the town and drowned it.
Yeah.
You know, to take out the Oni. Then, like, I could see the fact that a lot of things are at odds with them. And so, although they could sunder and take over a small village, in the end, and maybe the past Oni have, but in the end, it always leads to their demise. And so now they keep hidden.
So that's interesting. So that Oni actually, they're incentivized or forced to sort of stay in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Oni are scheming constantly about how to destroy the spirits or how to get their revenge or how to take control.
Yeah.
What if they weren't kind of the apex of the of demon kind on Obajima, and they're, you know, them being schemers is kind of might be their that's their angle, and they're not necessarily the most powerful themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're almost like, you know, we're playing with the idea that they're kind of, you know, ogre like Oni, but they're almost, I almost imagine them closest in kind to humans, you know, as demon, you know, as demons. So like the idea of they can, that, you know, you imagine them being like the cautionary tale in some way, even though they're spirits. So there's something about Oni that might be unsettling to people of the material or of the physical world, because of just almost, it could be how human-like they are or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then it's also something that is encounterable. We make them too powerful, this idea that these forces, you know, keep them in check, you know, that these elder spirits keep them in check. It pulls the elder spirits closer to the, like, to caring about what's happening kind of with people in a way that I think could diminish the kind of otherworldliness of an elder spirit. And it also means that, you know, Obajima skews kind of lower level or lower to mid level.
Right.
And so having Oni be kind of something that is still interactable with where most people are going to be playing Obajima.
Right.
Or where we expect them to. People are going to do whatever they want. and that's why, you know, I there's something about Oni that are also defeatable. You can outsmart an Oni, or you can get something like that is really intriguing to me. But at the same time, they're not chumps, right? Like, an Oni is still a powerful being.
Mm-hmm.
And so, especially compared to like an Oni versus like the average human or Nakudama, you know, there's really probably no contest there. So them creating, you know, taking over a village or an entire region or you know, possibly the island, that's still possible without them being, you know, this epic level creature.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think... The other thing too is we don't even need to state that there's like, oh, there's a number of Oni. There could be no Oni on the island. You know, it could be there could be one. It could be that the Oni were eradicated, or that, you know, there at one point in time, a spirit will turn into a demon and the new Oni will be born. But the point is, at some point in time in the space, Oni existed on the island and were like a formidable, scary thing.
Maybe that's the thing, is that you know, legend says that the Oni were wiped out. Right. And that's just sort of like a given. And then as you're adventuring, you find,
right,
like, mm-hmm, maybe you discover that there, there's an Oni. Is that the last one?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then you unfold the mystery and find out.
And not all demons are Oni.
Right. Right. It's a very specific. I think my concept or the idea that I was having is that there was one spirit turned demon, mm, who probably named itself Oni.
Yeah.
Like, I am, like, kind of like the Dara. There was like an initial Dara. There's like, mm, I am Oni. Like, that, mm-hmm, was his title or something, or that's what he named himself, or, you know, themselves. And they have went on to have children.
Yeah.
That would look, you know, and that's not something, demons aren't around going to have kids very often. So this is something that this demon did that was unique to it, and its offspring were then called Oni. Like, that was like their title, that was like the bloodline or whatever. Now there's also a possibility, and this ties into the overall concept of what I wanted to talk about here, which is, it also could be that the bloodline began to thin, and now Onis aren't born anymore, rather Oni sorcerers are born.
Mm.
Because they have that kind of strong blood, like all of sorcerer's magic is derived from their bloodline being connected to some magical thing,
mm-hmm,
a long time ago. So it could be that Onis just don't exist very, or that if there is an Oni, no one's seen one in hundreds of years. If where the timeline is that the age of the Dara, you know, the timelines in Obajima are broken up to ages, and ages exist in when the arrival of a being came into place. So there was the first age, there was the age of Nakadama, there's the age of humans, there was
the age of Dara,
and then the age of Dara. There's no age of elf. So
humans and elves
are the same, right? And then there's the age of Dara, and that's the age we're currently in, is the age of Dara. And so it could be that, like, there's not been a single Oni spotting in the entirety of the Age of the Dara. That being said, it also could be that these Oni sorcerers are, you know, the only remnants of Oni that exist on the island too. The DM can kind of play around with whatever they want with that.
And, like, yeah, I love that. I, like, to Adam's point, it's a thread that a DM can pick up. Yep. I think that's great.
Exactly. But the point is that they existed, and Obajimans most likely are pretty frightful of them, or fearful of them. Probably have a disdain for them, or at least know, like, they're connected to demons, and demons are very bad in Obajima. And so what I want to talk about is the Oni sorcerer and kind of concept of that and what that means to an Obajiman. Because the idea behind an Oni sorcerer is that as you utilize magic and utilize your meta magic, you begin to undergo a transformation, this slow shift into this Oni form. That kind of, and it doesn't happen at low levels, you don't turn into an Oni, but at higher levels, like, the more you use meta magic, the more you call on, like, your inner being, this kind of bloodline, the more you begin to transform and shift. And in later levels, you potentially make full transformations into this kind of ogre Oni visage. And so if that's the case, if that's the direction, how do this sorcerer bloodline fit into the world of Obajima? How do people interact with them? Are they scared? Are they seeing this? Like, if Oni all have this very specific look to them, like, this would be a recognizable look. So are people scared of them? Are they more accepting? What is the general vibe? Have at it.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
Yeah, it's fascinating, because if, let's say, the last Oni was seen, I don't know, let's say 1,000 years ago.
Sure.
The idea of the Oni either could have grown in the imagination of people later, mm-hmm, generations, or diminished.
Right.
You know, or it's just like, an Oni? Oh, you could just be saying, like, the monster under somebody's bed or whatever. Right. It's like, whatever. And so, and because magic is not unknown here, magic, there's a commonplace quality to magic here. somebody manifesting as an Oni, I guess the question is, how strange is that to people? Is it the distinct look of the Oni that is unsettling? Yeah. Like, is part of the magic of this subclass fear-based? You know, the idea right. of having this kind of this freaky presence about you, not just visually, but there is this like aura that you put out that is frightening to people. If that's the case, then it's also supernatural in nature.
Yeah.
Right. Just like that there is that quality that is, it's beyond just an initial reaction. This is actually what their magic is doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also like figuring out like what is the experience of, okay, I want to choose to be an Oni sorcerer. Like
right.
what are we telling the player who is drawn to that? Like, do they want to play a character that is going to have that effect on NPCs in the world? Like, let's say that effect is people are going to be suspicious of them, or people are going to be frightened by them, or people react to them with reverence.
Right.
Like, what's the experience we want that player to have? And maybe we don't have to be that prescriptive with it. Maybe we can say to the DM, like, hey, Obajimans might react in a variety of ways. They might react with fear. They might react with curiosity or reverence, or they might react with, like pitchforks and torches, you know, right. there might be a secret order on the island that is always looking for the return of the Oni. Like they wiped him out a long time ago, and maybe there's a Nakadama, order of, you know, like sort of like, you know, that there's like 10 of them on the island, and this Nakadama order is like, oh yeah, we know we wiped them out, but they are, you know, there was one that got away. Yeah. And we don't know what happened, so we're just always looking for it.
It's the frog version of the Knights Templar.
yeah, totally. And then it's like, all right, you know, and then maybe there's a table that that player has to roll on. Like, they walk into a village and they do some magic, and their skin turns blue or something like that, or you know, their eyes glow with like a baleful yellow, you know, smoking light or whatever, and then the villagers are like, you know, it's they're not like calling them Oni, but like you're one of the touched or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then there's some reaction.
This brought up something interesting. As you were talking, it occurs to me that, okay, so if this is a bloodline concept, how does this work with Dara? How does a Dara just sorcerer work?
Oh, Aldar are Oni.
Done.
That's why they've never seen any in the Age of the Dara.
That's it.
They're just like, we just rebranded.
Yeah.
Easy peasy.
Yeah. Oh, next question.
Next question. That's a really good point.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Wow. I guess we've written ourselves into a crowd of trees, into a hole with a person inside of it.
Conundrum wrapped in bacon.
I have no idea. If the sorcerer has a bloodline.
Maybe if you choose a Dara, you can't choose an Oni sorcerer.
I mean, just sorcerers in general.
Yeah.
Because sorcerers in general. Dara are not sorcerers.
I think maybe.
That's a radical idea.
That is a little... That's a hard one.
That's,
we could put in a DM's note and describe, like, there are ways I could see us pulling this off. For example, like, let's say I can't think of any of the sorcerers. Let's say it's a dragon sorcerer. I know that's one of the things that exists. And how would you describe that happening? Well, maybe like a dragon, like one of a, you know, like Reverend Dragon was killed or stabbed, and as it, you know, as it's doing its dog thing, as it's like finding a place to die in the woods. I know everyone.
That's
take,
old Yeller.
Everyone, take a moment to cry. Pause the episode. Cry a little bit.
It's
come
my
back.
Dog, Paul.
As it's well, like as the dragon's dying, like maybe it, you know, it goes and like rests by the tree, and like as its like essence is passing, it like bleeds into the Dara that will be born there years later.
Mm.
that is a hard one. We'll have to make a note of like, how would you introduce a bloodline? It would have to be some sort of infusion of magic. Yeah. I would imagine, like, as one thing passes, you could also, I don't want to do reincarnation necessarily.
Yeah.
But like some sort of passing of like a magic to another thing.
I mean, it could just be that it's in the glyph, you know, that it's infused in the glyph, and for the Dara that, you know, is born and goes bonk.
It's in the glyph.
It's in the glyph, you know, and they, and somehow that Oni magic gets in there.
It could be someone leaves a, this is interesting. The glyph gets left there, and it's, you know, 20 years before someone pops out, Adara pops out, and, you know, this glyph was cursed in some capacity.
Yeah.
Someone went and like scratched it and planted their own seal on top of it. And then the Dara is born with.
Or an Oni did it.
Yeah. Or an Oni did it. Yeah.
Like, I'm going to like, this is a way to get into the Dara sort of bloodline.
You could also play it as like an interesting method of transferring. Like if you could imagine, and again, I can't think of all the sorcerer options that are available, but you could imagine like a dragon of some sort or angelic being who's dying. I know I'm just trying to think of the ones, but like something mm-hmm. that would normally have a bloodline associated with it. And as they're dying, they're like, I need to pass information along. And so they're like, it's a Dara glyph. And they go and like infuse like their magic and like score a portion of it and trying to like leave a message for the Dara that will be born later. Like, here's some of my essence. Here's this thing you need to solve.
And it could be just like, I mean, that Dara just don't get to do it. I mean,
it's possible.
I know that it's like, you know, we're really restricting, but I think maybe that's not a bad thing. You know, like, hey, if you're going to play a Dara, you're going to be your own kind of unique, different, you know.
I don't hate that.
Yeah.
We could say like, look, standardly, Dara cannot be sorcerers.
Yeah. If you want to do it, fine.
If you want to do it, figure out a niche way to do it.
But yeah.
No other Dara will be a sorcerer besides you.
Because
character.
I think that creates something new. Like once players realize like, oh, there's Oni on the island. And like, oh, this could be a bad thing. And they realize like, oh, Dara cannot be Oni. Then they can trust all Dara. Like
that's cool.
They'll know. And if an Oni wants to be really crafty,
it'll disguise itself as a Dara. That's yep. cool.
And it's like, hey,
that's cool.
Hey, buddy. And it's like, oh, you're a Dara. You're cool. And the next thing you know.
He got me with his finger.
Like, claw across the throat.
I think, to jump back on what you said, I think I want to be a little prescriptive, as you said. I want to push a feeling and a vibe with this subclass, which I know is not what you'd normally do. We kind of did it with the Corrupted Ranger too, where it's like, you're dying. If you're playing the Corrupted Ranger, your character has a disease and you are passing away very slowly. And at a certain point in time, you are going to lose yourself to the corruption, either through death or through something else. And so that requires you to play a somewhat specific character. Like you can play whatever, you can be charismatic, you can be happy, you can do whatever. But the character has an ailment. And so we're forcing that kind of feeling into it. And I kind of want to do the same thing with the sorcerer, where it's like, if we're setting up demons to be scary, if we're setting up Oni to be dangerous, I want people to look at the sorcerer. I want the alterations and the effects of using your magic and turning into the Oni to be something that comes with a consequence or something that comes with like a choice. Like I'm gonna fight these howlers and I'm gonna save the town, but when I go back in there, they're gonna kick me out. And that's a story that's really interesting, and that we can kind of like because then it gives the player something to mess around with. It's like, well, I chose not to use it, or I'm holding myself back, or maybe there's like a love-hate relationship with who they are and how they feel about themselves. Or maybe they're trying to change. Maybe that character is trying to change the perspective of Oni and who they are and help others. There's a lot that comes through forcing this kind of story arc onto someone.
Yeah.
And obviously it's not like I'm forced, like I'm pulling the rug. Like, you'll know when you choose the sorcerer that this is, are the connotations that come with it.
Yeah. I think there's something really neat because it makes me feel a bit like Wolverine, the character, like that, or a character that is like, if I start to use my powers, I can actually slip and become I can become dangerous.
Right.
And that I think it would be interesting to have the Oni sorcerer in such a way that there's this group of powers that you can use. And if you use those group of powers, you can remain in control. Mm-hmm. You're just like casting spells. You're doing your thing, but you can punch up above your weight class and you can have the access to these powers that normally you wouldn't have.
Yeah.
But if you access those powers, you can activate, you're really activating your Oni blood. And if you do that, you can actually lose yourself and maybe go berserk, or maybe, you know, you know, your moral compass starts to spin in circles and you kind of, you know, you could cause a lot of damage, or you could kind of get bloodlusted or something. Yeah. And your friends become, you know, foes. Or,
well, it's kind of the flavor that gets lost in the barbarian could fit here, which is like, I have a totem and I take on the visage of a bear and I'm terrifying and I go into this feral rage, but then like that rage only ever works in your favor in the sense that like I'm killing bad guys, but when I turn to my friends, I'm like, hey buddy, high five, high five in battle. But it doesn't give like the
rage.
I've lost myself in anger. Yeah. You know, if that were, if someone wrote that into a story,
yeah,
that character would have personal consequences from going into a rage, which I think are lost in some D&D. Cause I get why you don't want to force certain things.
Yeah.
And you can obviously change and play the class however you want, but I would love to add some of that in there.
Could also be a thing of like, you know, either you lose sort of like your touch with your control, and you kind of can do things that are out of control, or that if you boost your magic and you go into this Oni sort of space, that you actually physically transform and you might not be able to physically transform back.
Yeah, I think that's also an interesting thing, is that at lower levels the transformations are pretty minor, but as you get higher there's almost this risk of permanently transforming.
Yeah, and you know, it's like, okay, I can use this little bit and I might kind of take on a like a hideous look to myself and frightening, and claws come out and I grow in size, and then but I can calm down and then everything kind of returns back to normal. But if you want to push it, let's say the party gets in trouble and you're like, hey guy, like I can do this magic and we might get into big trouble, or I can kind of push the Oni thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if I do it, it could mean something bad happens.
I feel like it. Oh, go ahead, Ari.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I feel like it kind of lays in, or this kind of fits nicely with some of the other tones of personal sacrifice that we've fit into the other spaces in Obijima, where, you know, like the gift spell, where you're sacrificing some of your life to heal another person, and some of the hero boons and things like that, where you are making a choice to better everyone else at the sacrifice. You're becoming a martyr in some capacity.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like the, like what's the fun? What's the fun at the table with this character?
That's what I want to know. So, like when I'm playing, you know, a storm sorcerer.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever. When I'm playing a sorcerer, there's the fantasy of the powers I get to wield, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's appealing about that bloodline. And what I think we need to do is solve, like, what is that fantasy of, cool, this is the ogre bloodline, I get access to these things, this is what makes it awesome. The story that surrounds it is interesting, but that can't be the entirety of the sauce of this, you know, of the sorcerer. So, well, like, you know, if you were to say, do you want to be a dragon sorcerer? Like, I already have this idea of I bet I could do dragon things. You know, like that's really cool. What does that mean for an Oni, right? Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Or if we're you know, going toward ogre, what does that mean? You get these transformations. So it's like, you know, your body changes in size. So now I become a sorcerer. I'm a sorcerer that is usually like a caster. But if I'm becoming ogre-like, like that's now I'm physically imposing as well. So, okay, that's something that's interesting. Anyway,
is it like a, because I was thinking as you were talking, like, is it like a Bruce Banner Hulk? Like,
that's interesting. Something like that would tell me more about the sorcerer. Now, Hulk usually, like in D&D terms, like you mentioned, the barbarian, that's usually where that space would play. Is this a different way to do that? Or a different angle on that? Oh, what I wanted to say was this is a mechanical thing that is probably not going to work, but it might inspire something.
Sure.
So the idea is like when you're pushing spells, what does that mean to push a spell? I've always thought the thing in like D&D, you have like your, you know, I'm a level 5 wizard, but I can only cast level 3 spells. Mm-hmm. Like that, there's something, you know, strange about this kind of gap there. But what if I'm a level 5 wizard or, you know, sorcerer or whatever, but I can push my spells to, I could push beyond 3. Like maybe I can go up, I'm going to say up to 5 because I'm a level 5 character at that point. But by doing that, that's when these like, you know, it's this idea of pushing the boundaries of magic probably in a forbidden way, which is might be linking back now to how Oni came to be. Did they do something in the spirit realm that's like, that's a big no-no. It's like, well, it's kind of our thing, you know? Like,
yeah. I think we're in the same line. My original, and I didn't jump in the mechanics. We can jump into mechanics.
Oh, let's do it. Yeah. Well, I'm all in.
But my initial concept with this was that the fault sorcerers have is the horde style of play where you go, I don't want to spend this. I don't want to spend my sorcery point. Mm-hmm. I think I need my sorcery point. I don't want to spend my sorcery point. And so the Oni mage or the Oni sorcerer, the concept was as you spend sorcerer points, you gain more of these features. Like I'm almost imagining like the barge that's holding back your bloodline is your sorcerer points, this innate magic. And as you spend it, you're thinning this veil and the bloodline, the more you call upon the bloodline inside of you, the more it appears. And so by the time you run out of sorcery points, one, you're now a benefit because you've gained these special powers from the Oni. You're transformed. But two, it incentivizes too. Yeah. So you're not just sitting there hoarding it. I have a player who's sat and played a sorcerer for 4 years in my campaign. And I couldn't think of a single time that he ended the capstone, the end of the campaign, he still had sorcery points left over. And it was like a, you know, it was a battle against a giant blue dragon, like ancient blue dragon who was just destroying cities and a storm was raging around and characters were dying and dropping and the castle was split in two and they were on two different towers jumping back and forth and he ended with sorcery points. And it's like, that's not what there's not going to be a secret encounter after this. Use your things. But the mentality is I need to save it. And so a subclass, outside of Oni, you know, it could be anything, but this subclass, what I wanted to do was reward characters for spending sorcery points, but then at the same time, building into the flavor that they're becoming more demon-like was just something that I thought was really interesting and added to what this character could be.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, you could play it one or two ways. You could play it where if the character picks an Oni sorcerer and they're like, yeah, I want to become an Oni, so I'm going to blow all these points as much as I can and Hulk out. Cool. It could also be that being an Oni is really bad. Like it's a bad thing. And you're actually spending the points to prevent you from doing it. Like if you get threatened, it's almost like Bruce Banner when he gets threatened. He's starting to Hulk out and he's trying to calm himself down. He's just trying to like do yogic breathing or whatever he did, you know, and to chill out. And it maybe by spending sorcerer points, I don't know, this might not work, but like you're actually preventing that from happening.
I think the downside of that variant is you'll want to spend sorcery points to activate abilities, but then you're taking away your buffs at the same time. Like if turning into an Oni is buffing you, then by spending sorcery points, you're actually removing the buff from you.
Yeah.
So You'll want the spend sorcery points to gain buffs, not spend sorcery points to remove them.
Yeah,
type mechanic.
If the meat of the subclass is also in having spent your sorcery points, so it's like it happens at the back end of, or the back half of play, essentially. Like, I've spent my sorcery points and now I get the benefits of my my subclass. And if it's super tied into the story of Oni are, you know, reviled, there's also, there's kind of a narrative incentive to not spend your last one. You know what I mean? Like, I can't really spend my last one right now because now I'm basically dictating the story myself as a character.
Yeah.
So there might be, you know, it might have that kind of opposite incentive. And then on top of that, like, you know, have, what does it mean when I'm casting or using my, my sorcery points before I get to that threshold, right? Like, the subclass still has to, we have to, still has to offer the player something even during,
Right. Yeah. You'll have, it's kind of, you could imagine it kind of like rage bonuses where you gain things, you have things that the subclass offers you outside of it.
Right.
And the moment you start to activate the rage, you gain extra benefits and stuff like that. It'd be the same thing with this.
That makes sense.
I think the other thing too is setting it up so you will never turn into an Oni until you're really high level.
Yeah.
Like at a fifth level character, let's say you blow all of your sorcery points. Maybe you just have horns.
Yeah.
Maybe your skin's red. Maybe your hair changes color. It grows extra long.
Yeah.
A seventh level character, you get both hairs long and your 10th level character, your skin's red. But then when you're like 14th, 16th, if you're spending all your sorcery points and you do this, it's like, maybe even there's like a cap. Anytime you're above 15th level and you spend your last sorcery point, you permanently turn into an Oni.
You know, it's, I like the permanent part. It's because that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to remove the curse or whatever if you want to go back.
Yeah, you could cast remove curse, but maybe the remove curse only works so many times.
Yeah.
So it's like, so all of a sudden the magic's not potent enough anymore. Yeah. And so like after you've removed the curse three times, it's like, it's not working.
Yeah.
You're going to have to do something else.
Yeah. Or if you do the last remove curse, you die.
Ooh, that's interesting.
You know, it's like, yeah, you get three, you know, or one or two, and then, but if you try it again, it's almost like your Oni self, your Oni spirit just wipes you out.
Yeah.
It's just like, well.
Yeah. Or yeah, you, maybe if you don't die, you could also be like, you're going to lose everything. You're going to become a commoner. You're just going to become a person.
Yeah.
Like, we've removed the bloodline from you.
Oh,
You've been cleansed.
Yeah.
But you know, you're not gonna
it's like this blood mist just kind of leaves your body, you know, the Oni spirit goes
the
back.
Oni spirit, the spirit goes back. Maybe the Oni spirit goes and forms and becomes an actual enemy later down the line.
Oh,
that's pretty crazy. Now we're just that's making far. We're none of these are going to be mechanics, but
it's fun to speculate.
That's the mechanically, that's what I'm thinking. Now we can also do pushing spells, and that's cool. I like the, and maybe that's something that you can only do when you're in the Oni form. Like when you're in the Oni form, you can kind of push beyond the levels of a standard, but then at the same time there's the negative, like yes, but like we were saying earlier, like, yes, here's this cool thing that you're doing, but here's the consequences, the
downside,
which is cool. Maybe no one else likes that. I personally really love, I mean, there's so many characters and so many things that you can take on where they can be anything. I like something that when I'm choosing this, I'm bringing on a little bit of baggage as a tool for me to experience and play my character.
Yeah.
Like I said, you can change, you can be whatever. You could be the Oni mage, might suffer mental like fatigue and maybe depression based off of who they are. They could be the exact opposite, where they're like the most because they're a sorcerer, they're the most charismatic person, you know. And they're going to change your opinion. And they're like, you know, so you can play the character however you want, but, and you can also just remove all this negative connotation. This is the way this is what we will suggest. And in Obajima, you can do whatever you want.
I mean, it's the philosophy, right? Like, you can be any sorcerer subclass, right? In Obajima.
Yeah.
Go for it. The idea with the book is, to offer insights, into the world itself, right? Like the Corrupted Ranger. These are all things where the Corrupted Ranger, you could probably make another in other settings, sure, but it is an Obajima thing. It's talking to things that you know, have to do with the island.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the idea of having a sorcerer that is very much embedded in the world building, I think is fine.
Yeah.
And if that's not your thing, there are lots of subclass options at this point, yeah. You know.
There's a ton of subclass options.
Yeah. Go for it. That's all fine.
Or just like, it's the spirit bloodline or something. You know, just change it for yourself. You know what I realized, though? Something that I've never really thought about till right now. There's none of, like, this is something standard D&D skews away from pretty heavily because they made a subclass and they made a playable race called Dragonborn, which are all five of them are connected to very, very evil characters that are usually the big bads of a lot of villains.
Yeah.
If you're playing a red Dragonborn, you were playing
the chaotic evil
red is a very chaotic evil thing.
Yeah. The chromatic dragons are the worst
and they
worship one of the heads of Tiamat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like it's interesting that there's like in standard D&D. And I think this is great because this shows how Obajimans think of the world. In standard D&D, there's tieflings and there's dragonborns running around. Hmm. And everyone's like, hey, half demon, high five. I'm a half dragon. Crazy. I heard your ancestor destroyed half of the world. Mine too. Mine's actually locked up in the first layer of hell.
And I come from hell too.
You're like, oh, that's crazy. But in Obajima, it's like, oh my gosh, you're half demon? That's horrifying.
Yeah.
That's scary.
And yeah, and
I'm a farmer. I can't deal with that.
People might run from you. Like people might respond very negatively.
Yeah.
But I think that's part of this. That's part of this experience. Like if you're going to choose that character, I think the fun of that character, playing that character, is like, when do you expose it? When do you expose this power?
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm like, I want to play a character that doesn't know that they're associated with Oni, but they know that they have these magical talents.
Yeah.
And then at some point I'm casting a spell and then I'm sorry, what's happening right now? I'm under duress. I'm casting the spells. I'm spent. I've done everything I could do. And then things that I've never known about myself start manifesting. It's like, oh yeah.
And, you know, like your buddy is like, dude, have you looked in the mirror lately? Like,
you didn't have horns this morning. Yeah.
I just realized I have a really, really strong comparison that I think will give everyone an idea of the type of character you could potentially play with this class. Mm-hmm. And it's my boy Zuko. It's my boy Zuko. There is an amazing episode. It's actually, I think it's two episodes, maybe one, where Zuko in Avatar: The Last Airbender. Haven't watched it, get on it. I won't say anything about the live action, but the cartoon. Zuko goes and helps Earth Kingdom. He's a firebender and no one knows he's a firebender. He actually has a scar, so he looks like he's, you know, an afflicted refugee from the Earth Kingdom.
This is Zuko alone. One of the best episodes of anything ever.
And he has his two swords and he's using these two swords to fight these corrupt guards. And eventually the guards are winning and he gets hit by a hammer and he gets knocked back down and he's about to lose the fight and he uses his firebending and he wins the fight. But the town and the person he helped and the little kid he likes that he gave a gift to shuns him and he has to leave. And that is the type of character that you'll be playing when you play the Oni Sorcerer.
I'm in. Yeah, that's great.
That's how I envision it. Like a character who's like, I'm doing the right thing. And you don't understand because of the people outside of my control, what they've done to you is making you look at me in a certain light. But I can promise you that's not the case.
Yeah.
And that's a super interesting and powerful character.
Yeah.
Like emotionally powerful and moving character.
Yeah. There's a lot of great story stuff in there. And the idea that it's that temptation to use your power, but narratively there is a downside, but potentially, I mean, your DM might be like, okay, you know, let's say you're in the Bracken wetlands and that's kind of more the place where oddballs and misfits go, you know, and you're like, okay, you can kind of let loose here. But if you're over on the west side of the island where, you know, everything's kind of idyllic and, you know, sunshine and, you know, nothing really is like too terribly wrong. It's like the Shire.
Yeah.
But if you pull out some Oni stuff there, it's going to freak people out.
Yeah. There's also, it shows, because again, something we're talking about all the time is growth in the world. You affecting the world and the world affecting you. Something we were literally just talking about off camera. How interesting and how what an effective tool for the DM to present the change in the world and you affecting the world itself is through your initial reaction in a town where you use your spells and you turn into an Oni and people are scared, compared to the next time you do it. And as you're about to get kicked out, someone that you saved from a town ago, like, puts their hand up and is like, no, they, we kicked him out at the time, but they helped me. She helped me. She saved my life.
Mm.
And now she's doing it again. And you're treating her like this.
Yeah.
Like, that's really cool.
Yeah. And it could be like, I think you mentioned earlier, like, changing the perception of Oni in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a good thing, but maybe it's a bad thing. You know, maybe it's like saying, all tigers in the jungle are friendly and nice. And people are like, oh, okay, well, we'll go let my children go pet one. And it's like, wham, takes and runs off in the woods with, and it's like,
boom, what? Intro to Jungle Book.
Yeah, that's right. Mowgli. But that idea that, that somebody is trying to overcome, that they're trying to overcome this past of these beings that were definitely dangerous and that caused a lot of mayhem, and they're afflicted by it, but they also recognize it within themselves. Like, if like I'm an Oni sorcerer and I start to really use that power and I can feel it and I'm like, ooh, yeah, I know. I know this is dangerous. This is dangerous stuff. Like, the more I use it, the more I can. It's like a Jedi going to the dark side, that moment. And like, if a Jedi could become, or if a Jedi could be very self-aware at that moment when they start to tip over and go, ooh, wow, I now I know why everybody talked about don't be tempted by the dark side. It's like, wow, that was tempting. Like, yeah. I really want to do it. And because I really want to do it so bad, I'm not ever going to do it. Yeah.
It's cool.
It's a cool thing. Yeah, that's neat.
We have a little bit of time left. What I want to do is jump into some... Well, one, does anyone have any final thoughts on like the concept and the feeling and who... Do we have an understanding or do we have any disagreements on what this character might be? Or what this type of story arc or this, the vibe of this character might be?
Yeah, I love... Maybe there's some specialized spells. Like that they can access. I don't know if we, that's like, that's like too much of a lift. It's like, oh man, we gotta create new spells. Like, holy smokes, that's gonna be, a lot of work. That would be cool. Another thing would be cool is like the idea that, if you let out this Oni self and your reputation could spread. Like, imagine you let out some Oni magic and then a courier brigade person's there and they ride around, and then when you get to another town, they're waiting for you. They know you're coming, and they're like, "Oh, So you got to deal with that." So
yeah, let's. That was the other thing. Let's jump into mechanics really quick before we end this. So some concepts, the use of sorcery points I think is really strong, although it doesn't have to be. I like the idea of pushing magic in some capacity, gaining access to the arcane that you might not normally have, except in your Oni form. It could be a representation of like spell casting beyond a certain spell cast that you're able to might be breaking, but you could be like, if you revert to this form, you gain a spell slot that you might regain your highest level spell slot back or something to that effect, or something in that capacity where you're tapping into magic. You're like a normal sorcerer at third level can only cast, or fourth level can only cast one third level spell, but the Oni sorcerer was able to do it twice or something. And if we did that, you'd have to limit certain things. These are general concepts, everyone. So this will shift.
Actual mechanics.
Yeah, not actual mechanics. So we'll have to play around with it. But another thing I wanted to bring up is shape shifting And I don't want the Oni sorcerer to be able to shapeshift. Or the Oni sorcerer to be able to shapeshift. I think the shapeshifting mechanic comes in the transformation.
Yeah.
But if we are just like, oh yeah, then you can cast disguise self at will, then it's like, well, we've gotten rid of the point. And I'd almost say one of the negative connotations is if you are transformed to an Oni, you can't cast illusionary magic that alters your form. Like, you are stuck in this form until it fades, which I would imagine happens at a long rest. Like, you revert back to yourself after you've, you know, regained some of your strength.
So then taking on Oni attributes, you know, you mentioned horns. I think you mentioned like a claw type thing, size.
Your eyes, right? turn colors.
Yep.
You get tusks.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe those attributes are each associated with an effect you get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You could also, this is something I haven't seen, and I don't know if people would like this. I used to play Heroclix when I was younger.
Me too.
Who doesn't love a good Heroclix? A mechanic that you will understand very well is that as you take damage in Heroclix, you click a little base and it changes what abilities you have. So it could be that you have a certain ability. The moment you tap into a sorcery point, you go down a level, and it's like, how many sorcery points do you have left? I have 3. Well, these are the abilities you currently have access to. Now I have 2. Well, these are the abilities you currently have access to. So as you use them, you become more Oni-like and your abilities shift. So it could be like, at low levels, you have the horn ability. Then you gain the eyes of Oni. Then you gain the strength of Oni. Then you gain the visage of Oni. Then you get the, you know, there's these things that you're unlocking. So you don't have access to all of them all at the same time. And that also mechanically builds in this, like, I'm going to use this to get here. Okay, now I'm going to spend 2 sorceries and I'm going to jump up to here, because then I'm going to get this, which is going to be, you know, come in clutch in this moment.
And every time you get, like, let's say I get the talons of Oni, and then I'm like, I'm going to push a little bit more. Now I get the visage of Oni. You know, that has, like, now your charisma is down, you know, 2 points.
Yep.
Now you gain automatic, like, disadvantage on persuasion rolls, but you get +2 on, you know, intimidation. Like, there are these, like, riders that kind of go along with these things that, you know, basically like flavor it up and put you into that spot where it could be like, okay, you know, we've got to go do something. If I can push it to where I get the eyes of the Oni, then I have access to this power, and that power then helps us do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, so I've got to, like, you know, kind of go through this transformation to get that power so then I can do the other thing.
And then what you can do is, this can be the scaling system that, in general, that's how it works. And then at higher levels, you can kind of, like, flick them on almost. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like,
you could just jump right,
like,
to
it. There's the claws Oni or the horns Oni. That's the first, you know, that's the first level of this. And it goes up to 7 or 9 or something like that. And at higher levels, at like 11th and 10th level, you're just like, you know, you start combat, and the moment you cast a spell, you gain these 3 attributes.
Yeah, your
eyes
just go poof.
Instantly, you know, push into it because you're so attuned to it. But that also means that you're starting the bar at a higher, like, you instantly jump to this thing, which means now you're climbing to get to Oni much faster. I don't know if this is mechanically, I don't know if this is something people will like. This is pretty alien in the when it comes to D&D. But I can kind of think that's the point. Is if I'm just recreating something that someone's already done 1,000 times, it's not as interesting. Flavor is one part, but, like, mechanically, this would be something incredibly unique.
And I think, you know, people who play sorcerers are kind of already, you know, they're already used to dealing with points and, you know, fiddling around and you know, trying to, like, you know, cast different, you know, kinds of spells. So,
yeah. And I want to push, you know, sorcerers anyway. I love the idea of, like, there's magic in your blood.
Yeah.
Like, there's magic.
You got to get it out.
There's magic coursing through you.
Yeah.
And that's strange. And I think that, you know, the idea of that manifesting in some way, I wish that was just more of a through line anyway, about most sorcerers, it should be, you know, bubbling up in some physical way that is not just, I get to cast a thing. It's like, okay.
Yeah, it is interesting that, like, dragon sorcerers, like, you're a person who has dragon magic, and then at 14th level they're like, you also have wings now. And you're like, whoa, what the
bloop.
Yeah.
That happened.
Just woke up one morning with wings.
Classic. And we've all been there.
Yeah. Several nights. woke up with wings. Oh my God. What a day.
Woke up with wings in Tallahassee.
Yeah.
ID lost.
Yeah. Didn't know.
Mm-hmm. How did I bought three Mini Coopers?
Yeah. Yeah. Woke up, looked in the mirror in the hotel.
Crazy 4th of July.
You know, it happens.
It was Christmas when I got there, though.
They call that self-induced coma. So, yeah, mechanically, that's where I'm thinking. Is there anything else that you think, like, again, we'll flesh all this stuff out, but I like the spending sorcery points and growing like your Oni form changes as you spend them. And then those unlock certain things. And then at higher level, you're able to instantly access those things as like maybe when you cast a spell. So it could be that like, it could be that you have this track where you're like, I'm turning into an Oni and I start with eye or I start with horns. Then I start with hair. Then I get skin, then my eyes change, then my size changes, then this thing, I get claws, and it goes on and so forth. But at higher levels, as when you cast spells, you can kind of flip some of the magic on from previous. Mm-hmm. Like, I have the eyes of Oni, which are giving me this thing. But when I cast a spell, I can activate the claws or activate the other thing. And then I kind of revert back to eyes of Oni, the current level I'm at.
It's almost like some transformations now become cantrips in a way.
Exactly.
And you're just like, okay.
Which is cool. But mechanically, this would be an incredibly complex character.
I mean, it's also interesting in that, you know, if I'm a character who does want to lean into my Oni nature, my loadout of spells is going to be influenced by that too. Because I might start off with much more like, hey, this is my caster build or whatever, but I know that I'm going to end up with Oni claws. And so I'm going to have spells that make that even more effective. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to be augmenting myself with these types of things. It could be really cool.
And I think by the way, I don't think that the Oni form should turn you into like, I'm a melee fighter now. Mm-hmm. I think the Oni form should give certain things to you that are beneficial that an Oni would have. So for example, if you had Oni claws, like if you had, you know, these razor sharp fingernails, don't think like, I'm going to go claw someone now. Think, I'm going to deal, when I cast a touch spell, I deal with D10 in piercing damage. Because I'm like, I'm not touching you, I'm grabbing onto you and I'm digging into you. You know, there's benefits that the Oni might have that work with magic, not as a separate thing.
Yeah, I think like Oni's melee attacks are magical.
Yeah.
So you just like your claw attack is a magical attack.
Yeah.
And then maybe makes all your attacks magical. You know, like doesn't matter what you could pick up a normal sword, but now that you're an Oni or you've got that ability, now that's a magic sword.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Oh, I like it. I feel like we're wrapping up this episode. Really good stuff. I really like where this is personally. I know I kind of feel like I forced a little bit on this one on you two.
No.
On like my opinions and thoughts on this, but I was pretty passionate about it.
I think there's a way to make it uncomplicated. Like there's just complexity to casters anyway.
Yeah,
like wizards and sorcerers are just rough, but I think there's a way to make it intuitive and not complicated. So I don't know, it's a challenge. It'll be fun.
I'm also trying to decide too, do I wait to hear initial reactions from the podcast? Let me get closer, sorry. Do I wait to hear initial reactions and then generate the subclass? Or do I
lean into your Oni blood
and into my Oni blood
and just do it?
Well, you'll find out, because if I lean into this, it'll be available when this episode goes out.
That's right.
And if I don't, then I'm waiting for your opinions. Anyways, thank you so much for joining us. My name is Jeremiah, Ari and Adam. We're the writers of Obojima, and this was a subclass build, kind of. You can watch the podcast on YouTube and eventually Spotify and other places like that. Follow us on social media. Join our Discord page, Obojima across all boards. We do cool content. You can see artwork and other things like that. And you can talk about the Oni Mage, the Oni Sorcerer, in the playtest section of the Discord. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will catch you next time.
Oni Sorcerer.